This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Tree Lin and Shamila Ganesan. Tonight, in honour of the upcoming final verdict for Dato' Sri Najib Razak, a dive into the appeals that our judicial system offers and what the options are.
So first, we talk about how our system works from conviction to appeals and what options exist for people who have been found guilty. And then a run-through of politically linked cases in the past and what we learned from them.
So we're going to have two lawyers on. Do you have questions about the cases involving Najib? Send them through to us. We can try and get them answered. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08. Basically, there's been a lot of stuff in the news recently about Dato' Sri Najib Razak, his court case, and specifically his team. Because on the 7th of June, Dato' Sri Najib Razak and his team filed for a final bid to the federal court to overturn the High Court's decision for his SRC international conviction. And leading up to his final appeal, he dismissed his former counsel of Shafi Abdullah & Co. in favour of Zaid Ibrahim, Suflan TH Liu and partners. However, Shafi & Co. will remain his counsel in all other trials. Now, as reported in the Malaysian Insight, Najib's representatives were quoted as saying he expresses confidence that the new team that has been assembled will bring different perspectives to his defence. This also followed the High Court's dismissal of the application by Queen's Counsel Jonathan Laidlaw to be admitted to fight this case. The Federal Court has rejected the bid of Najib's new counsel to delay proceedings. And according to his lawyers, the grounds for the postponement were supposed to be due to the formal counsel not sharing the appeal records in time. All of which, I think, brings us to a brief look back at where we are, where we find ourselves.
Yes, so specifically to do with the SRC international case, right, which has its links back to the whole 1MDB issue. Now, on the 28th of July last year, Najib was convicted by the... Oh, not last year. In 28th July 2020, Najib was convicted
what
by...
What is time?
The, I know. So he was convicted by the High Court on all seven of the criminal charges brought against him. He was sentenced to 12 years of jail and a fine of 210 million ringgit. In December last year, the Court of Appeal upheld that conviction. If we go back to July 2018, where this all began, Najib was arrested and charged for the misappropriation of SRC international funds that totaled to 42 million ringgit. And then in August 2019, his second trial began relating to accusations that he illicitly obtained 2.28 billion ringgit from 1MDB between 2011 and 2014. This amounts to 21 counts of money laundering and 4 of abuse of power. So he faced a total of 42 counts relating to 1MDB. This ranged from corruption and money laundering to abuse of power, taking illegal bribes and criminal breach of trust.
So that is where the first half of our show is going to be, right? Looking at what awaits us potentially in this upcoming decision, but also understanding the process, right? So in a court case, what happens after you've been convicted? Answering some questions like, how come people who have been convicted don't seem to behave like they've been convicted or, are free to walk around,
roam the streets
and work? Yes. And in the second half of our show, we are instead going to be talking about other politically linked cases or cases involved, high profile cases involving politicians in our country, just to see what we can learn from them. Both in terms of how the cases were carried out, but also what the decisions actually were. These include members of the court cluster. It includes Musa Aman, who was acquitted on all 46 charges of corruption and money laundering. We are also talking, of course, about UMNO President Dato' Sri Dr. Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, who's facing 47 charges of criminal breach of trust, corruption, money laundering, things like that. So let us know. Basically, today is going to be all about our court system, our appeal system. Do you have questions about the cases involving Najib that you'd like to have answered by lawyers? Because those are going to be our guests. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be joined by Goh Chia Yee, criminal lawyer. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Business. Finance. and music. BFM 89.9.
It is just about 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila, and today we're doing a deep dive of sorts into the appeals that our judicial system offers, and basically what options exist for people who have been found guilty. This is in light of the upcoming decision in the case involving Datuk Sri Najib Razak. If you have questions about that, you can send them our way. Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Speaking to us now is criminal lawyer Goh Chia Yee. Chia Yee, always good to have you with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So let's start with the trial itself. Datuk Sri Najib Razak's final appeal is around the corner. Explain to us the significance of this.
Well, this final appeal is significant because we've been waiting for this since 2015, at least some of us, because this final appeal will be conclusive determination of his guilt. So up until now, everything has been, the sentence with which he ought to be serving has been stayed. So we're waiting for the final appeal before the sentence can be carried out. So if the final appeal decides that the conviction against him is safe, then he would have to serve the sentence that has been put on him, which is 12 years imprisonment, as well as a fine of 210 million. Of course, there are other sentences as well for the other charges, but they run concurrently. So in brief, that is why it's important. The second one is because it will affect his eligibility as a member of parliament. So if he's found to be guilty or his conviction is safe, then what will happen is that potentially there may be a by-election for his position as an MP as well. And he won't be able to run for the next general election.
So a person is found guilty. What options are there for them to take next?
So if they're found guilty, the option that they have is to appeal to the court, first instance above them. So, for example, if you're found guilty in the lower court, the magistrate court, then you will appeal to the high court. And if you're not satisfied with the decision of the high court, you will appeal to the court of appeal with the leave from the court of appeal. But in what happened in Datuk Sri Najib Razak's case is that his trial was conducted in the high court. So the court of first instance after that would be the court of appeal, and then the appeal to the federal court. So that is, in general, the process, the appellate process for a criminal case.
So is it common for a person who is found guilty to then go to prison immediately?
So I think this question is something that popped up recently with Sam Kerting as well, when she was, the stay was not granted for her case and so on. But actually, whether a person should go into prison immediately or not really depends on your offence. For example, if the offence which you're facing is murder or drug trafficking, most likely you will already be in prison pending the conclusion of the trial. So what will happen is that you just remain in prison and then you will be sent to another prison to serve your sentence. Whereas for someone with offence which isn't as serious as that, potentially what may happen is that your lawyer during the day of your sentence may ask the court to grant a stay for the sentence. In this case, a stay was granted for both the sentence and the fine. So I think not many people are involved in murder or very serious cases like that. So and I think it would be more common for people not to go to prison immediately. But in order for a stay to be granted, they still need to show special circumstances in this case. So for Datuk Sri Najib Razak's case as well, the judge stated there were several special circumstances to consider, considering his position as an MP, and there are many other questions of law that were raised during his trial, which hasn't been answered before. And so the fact that the fine was in a huge amount.
You touched briefly just now on the appeal, but what steps would the convicted person have to take to appeal against the verdict?
So like I said, the first step would be to file a notice of appeal within the specified period of time. So once you file a notice of appeal, what you're essentially doing is that you are notifying the court of your intention to appeal against the decision of the court. So for a criminal case, the appeal could either be solely on the conviction or for the sentence, or for both. So in this instance, obviously the appeal was against both the conviction and the sentence or the decision as a whole. So once the court has been notified of that, for criminal cases, what will happen is that the registry of these, the courts will then prepare the record of appeal. So the record of appeal will contain whatever happens throughout the whole process. So from the submissions that are filed, the documents that are filed, the petition of appeal, all those things. During the trial, there will be a transcript of everything that has been said as well as evidence. So that all has to be prepared. And once that is prepared, then the appeal dates can be fixed. So what we mean by the appeal date is the hearing date. And before the hearing date, 14 days before, they will ask for you to file in your written submissions So what we mean by that is your written arguments so that the court can go through those arguments. So for a case like Dr. Sri Najib Razak's case, it's a lot of documents, but that has been kind of settled during that appeal from High Court, the Court of Appeal. So that's why the Federal Court one is faster than that appeal in the Court of Appeal stage. So basically, that is in general what the steps that the convicted person would have to do.
My next question, I think, is a two-parter in some ways, because firstly, I'm asking you generally. Secondly, I'm also asking you in relation to this exact situation. So what kind of strategies can the defence apply during this time to help their case? What do they usually need to mount a successful defence or overturn the ruling? So I mean that both firstly in the general sense, and secondly, what might apply here?
So, I mean, usually you hear all the 1001 reasons. Like, for example, in Najib Sri Razak's case, the petition of appeal. Petition of appeal is a document that contains, like, the grounds of your appeal. So, for in this instance, to the Federal Court, I think there were 94 grounds. So, that's a lot of grounds and reasons. But at the end of the day, the number one thing is whether the conviction against the person is safe. So, can the court say, despite some of the potential errors that have been committed by the High Court, or maybe the Court of Appeal in upholding that judgment, was conviction safe? Has the accused been prejudiced in a way that we can say that it isn't safe for us to convict this person? So that is, in general, the question that everything will revolve around. So even if you were successful on a legal point and the court may agree with you on that, it does not necessarily mean that the conviction will be overturned. And that's for conviction. In terms of sentence, of course, you have to show that the sentence is proportionate to the offence that is committed.
Right, so how long would it take for a judge to decide on a sentence in a case like this? I mean, what goes into the consideration when it comes to the length and the severity of the punishment?
From my experience, usually on the day itself, they will consider the sentence, or usually leading up to the conviction, the judge probably have considered the sentence, or the judge may ask for submission. What we mean by submission is arguments from either the lawyer or from the other side on what that sentence should be. So in a particular case, this particular case for Dato' Sri Najib Razak, I think, of course, there were submissions put forward on what the sentence should be and so on. And I think the judge considered as well many other cases along these lines involving a public servant or public officer. And he found that, most of these cases have 5 years or more imprisonment. And when you decide to imprison someone under Section 23 of the MACC Act, then you have to also fine them. And the minimum fine is actually 210 million. So the judge actually decided to sentence the minimum fine for Dato' Sri Najib Razak. So that is in general what the judges will have to take into consideration when it comes to sentence.
We have a question from a listener, Nikki, who says, would the sentencing be revised upwards or downwards?
It could be either way. That's the thing about the appeals on sentence, is that it could either be going upwards or going downwards. But of course, for the fine, it can't go any more downwards. It can only go upwards. But in terms of the imprisonment, we have several charges. But the one that's 12 years is Section 23. That one, the maximum is 20 years. So, yeah.
So in terms of the sentencing, how would judicial precedent factor in?
Judicial precedent is important because what will happen is that we will put forward a set of cases and say, according to the trend of cases recently, the sentence ought to be looking like this. So judicial precedent there is important to see what would be the reasonable sentence for an offence like this. So of course, this offence is special. I don't think we had any former Prime Minister that was in this position. So in terms of judicial precedent, so it's a bit iffy, because in the UK, they would have sentencing guidelines done by a sentencing council, and they will list exactly what the factors you would take into consideration, like aggravating factors or mitigating factors. But in Malaysia, we don't have such a scenario over here, although I do hear that there have been talks about it. But for now, we just have to rely on judicial precedent, but it's also very case-specific, dependent on the facts of the case and the severity of the offence.
Now, back in June 2018, Rafizi Ramli did avoid a jail sentence after he was released on a good behaviour bond. Is something like that also a possibility here?
Definitely not. Because for a good behaviour bond, firstly, you got two options. You could go under what we call Section 173A or Section 294. So the distinction between these two is that 173A is there won't be any conviction that's recorded, whereas for 294 is for first-time offenders. So generally, what it means is that instead of having to serve your sentence or get a conviction, in the case of 173A, you can just have a bond for maybe up to 3 years, which you don't have to commit an offense. But these sections only apply to non-serious offenses. So serious offenses mean offenses that have an imprisonment of 10 years or above. So it won't apply in this case. The judge won't be replacing it. Let's say, for example, Rafizi in Court of Appeal, the Court of Appeal decided to give him a bond, but in the Sri Najib Rasa's case, it's either imprisonment or whatever it is that's been decided.
Chai, what would you like to leave us with in terms of the upcoming proceedings?
I think it's finally here. I think it's been a long time for this country. I've been waiting for this verdict as well. Recently, we've seen the verdict of Roger Ng, and we understand the impact of the verdict on our country. So, knowing that the final appeal is coming up, I think finally we have a closing chapter of this book. Obviously, there will be other efforts as well going forward. So, just to give a bit of an example, let's say, for example, if he was found to, the conviction was found to be safe, then maybe potentially they would like to apply for a review. So, the federal court can review its own decision, and this will require leave. So, I assume this is something they will try. And in the event that fails, then obviously this will be a conclusive determination of his guilt. Although there's something else to consider as well, which is whether a pardon will be given, if any. I highly doubt any should be given, but obviously that is not within our power to decide. But in any event, I think we should have faith in our courts. We should have faith in the court system. So far, in the High Court and Court of Appeal, I think if you read the judgment, you would say that actually the decision by our judges has been very fair, and it's been in accordance with the law. And so I have faith in the judiciary as well. And I believe that public faith in the system is important for anything to work. It's only through our regulation of ourselves that's how the law works. And so I have faith in the system, and I hope everyone else does the same as well.
Chiayi, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was criminal lawyer Goh Chiayi taking us through the appeals process. And this is in light of the fact that the final bid to the federal court to overturn the High Court's decision in the SRC international conviction is basically around the corner, and we thought it was as good a time as any, maybe even a better time than most, to actually understand how the system works. After this, we're going to be discussing previous politically linked high-profile cases and what it is that we can learn from those situations. We'd like to hear from you, though. What are your thoughts on this? And do you have questions about the cases involving Najib? Any burning, you know, queries or curiosities that you've had that you maybe want to put to a lawyer? Because our guests today are both lawyers, might be able to answer. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back for your questions and messages as well as our next guest after this, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Tonight, in light of the upcoming final appeal of Datuk Sri Najib Razak in the case involving SRC International, we've been talking about the appeals system basically in our country, and after this we're going to turn our attention to former cases, similar cases, although perhaps we can't say similar, I think it's quite singular, but former cases that were also high profile and that were politically linked. We've been asking you for your thoughts and questions on this. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have this, well, it's not a question per se, it's sort of a situation that Ro is putting forward.
So, Ro says, what's the likelihood that the former PM, if convicted, will be able to snack in his cell on his favourite Super Ring snack? And will it be frowned upon by the Rakyat as a special privilege? Great question. Don't know the answer to that, Ro.
Well, I think the second part, will it be frowned upon, is something that we can answer without it impinging on anything to do with our legal system. But yeah, the former, I don't know. That's a tricky one.
Also, the power of memes, I tell you.
We also have Ravi, who simply says the rule of law is a painful, long process. And, you know, this is something that perhaps lawyers and judges are more intimately aware of than the layperson. And you know, I'm including all of us, because I do think there is this expectation when it comes to court cases that, okay, it's finally gone to court. And now from here on out, it's going to be, you know, it's just going to be chapter after chapter and the closing of the book. And that hasn't really been the experience.
I think for us, it's also been the way in which these events have unfolded, the length of time that's taken. I mean, we've been through a whole, like two different governments and a pandemic in the course of these, all of these events unfolding. So naturally, because of how much this is also in the spotlight, I think it just feels to people like they've been talking about this and waiting for an outcome for a very long time.
So we've been asking you whether you have questions or thoughts, really, about the cases involving Najib Razak. Both our guests this hour are lawyers and so perhaps can help to answer or illuminate a little bit. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to answer some of those questions, but also talk about previous politically linked cases, is lawyer Fahri Azad. Fahri, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure, Lynn, Shamila.
So before we talk about previous cases, I thought we could start with some of the questions that have come in through messages. So firstly, an anonymous message says, is there a possibility that if Najib is found guilty, that he wouldn't serve jail time under a compassionate basis, considering his age?
I don't think that is a reason for not serving your sentence. But I think there's, of course, a lot of speculation going on about that. And I think one of the questions I think that on some people's mind is, can he get out of it, right? Can he get out of not going to prison? That's something a lot of people are talking about and speculating, yeah? But if that's the reason that he's going to advance, then no, I don't think that would be it. Well, but, you know, if you look overseas at some of these prominent fellas, when they get arrested, charged, and then eventually convicted, somehow some medical condition comes up and, you know, they're able to prepare documentation that persuades the authorities that maybe keeping them in a hospital is a better thing. So that's a possibility, looking at how it goes on in other countries.
We also had Asri, who called and had two questions. Firstly, for Najib's case, will he be able to appeal again? Secondly, if he were a layperson, would he be allowed these privileges, such as the continuous appeal and motions to seek UK counsel and change lawyers?
First one is easy. No, there's no further appeal from the federal court. That's the highest court. Now, whether a normal person, not a political elite, as I categorize these people, all those processes are open to them. They can appeal all the way to the federal court. So that is open to them. The court also will assign counsel for people charged with capital offences. And we've appealed all those all the way to the federal court, and we can make applications as well. It's just that, you know, it's more in terms of resources that are available to the accused. And most normal people will not be able to file in all kinds of applications or even get a UK counsel. I mean, you know, they have trouble paying their own local lawyers. So forget about getting a QC in, you know.
If you have other questions or thoughts, really, around the cases involving Najib Razak, because I think, as you know, you mentioned, Fahri, there's a lot of question speculation. Anyway, you can send them our way. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So, Fahri, just to set us up, right, for this next part of our show, how have politically linked court cases shaped our national political scene in the past?
Immensely, I would say. You know, you've had a deputy prime minister removed. You've have, you know, people who were charged and you know, general public felt they were guilty, but then suddenly they get off, thus guaranteeing their right, their continued position in power, either as an MP or minister or whatever. When defamation damages were high in the 90s and the early 2000s, right? That was used to maintain the political status quo by silencing people with defamation claims like they do in Singapore. I think political court cases have shaped not just the Malaysian political scene, but it has also had a huge impact on the kind of cases decided and the precedent set in the legal sphere. So definitely.
Do the bulk of these cases typically revolve around charges of corruption?
Yeah, of course. It's not always corruption per se, but things that are related to corruption, right? Like breach of trust, you have fraud, you have murder, right? It's corruption in itself, as well as the effect of corruption and what corruption allows for. So really, corruption is like this box you open and a whole lot of other offenses come up along with it.
So I don't know whether you're going to consider this question complex or simple, but talk to us about some of the more notable cases in recent history.
There are many ways to talk about notable. So for me, notable usually for the general public is something that's, exciting or it's unusual. One I would think of is Mona Fendi, for example, right? So she was charged and hung eventually for murdering a politician, right? And what was this politician? What did he want to do? He went to her hoping that, he gets some kind of, jumpy or whatever, so that he can make headway in the political arena, So that's how it can be related, but not seemingly related, You have, for example, I will say Altan Tuya's case, right? It's never been made clear why these two active officers went and did what they did and murdered somebody. We still don't quite really know who gave instructions for that. And surely that's corruption too. Corruption doesn't always manifest itself so directly, right? And then, of course, you have Anwar Ibrahim's case, right? He was convicted for sodomy, okay? So to me, those are notable in its relation to how corruption is also operating in those, not directly as the subject matter of the case, but it's definitely influenced by it. This is a very purple patch we have in terms of charges against the political elite. So when you say some of the more notable cases, I think there are quite a few flying around as well right now. I've never seen so many of the political elite being charged and charged seriously at that, it's not a half-hearted kind of prosecution. The prosecutors look like they're going all out for this one.
What's the rate of conviction in these politically linked court cases? And how many actually go on to serve time?
I think if they're convicted, they tend to serve time, that's not something you can really get out of. You can get one third off for good behavior. But rate of conviction, I'm afraid I don't have those numbers. But from a perception standpoint, that answer really depends on which government is in and what's the political climate in that judiciary over that period as well. But if I have to say generally, I get the sense that, if you're in opposition, you're more likely to get convicted than if you are close to the political elite, especially at those very close to the power sources.
We're speaking today with lawyer Fahri Azad about politically linked cases that we've seen in the past in light of the larger looming final appeal of Datuk Sri Najib Razak. If you've got questions or thoughts that you'd like answered, you can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're continuing our conversation with Fari after this. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:51 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila, and we're talking today about Datuk Sri Najib Razak's final appeal that's upcoming in the SRC case, and asking you if you have questions or thoughts that you'd like answered. We are, however, at this point of the show, talking about former politically linked cases, what it is that we can learn from that. Send us your thoughts, though. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're continuing our conversation now with lawyer Fari Azad. So, Fari, looking specifically at Najib's cases, are there past cases or situations that have parallels to the types of charges that he's facing today?
Yeah, in a sense, they're corruption related charges. Yeah, so definitely. But I think Najib's case is definitely unprecedented in a way that, you know, you've got the country's number one PM charged. I think that in itself is unprecedented, right? We've had DPMs before, but never a PM. So in one sense, yes, there are parallels with previous ones because they are for corruption as well. But in another sense, because of who he is, it's quite a different one as well. You know, not so much in terms of the law, but in terms of the caliber of people there, the quality of arguments, and that it's the former PM.
Can the outcome of past cases give us an indication of what will happen with Najib and the court cluster cases that are going on?
Well, when you say precedents from past cases, yes, of course they are being used today, and they will have a bearing because it contains law that has application. You know, lawyers always argue with precedent. We have to show authority. So definitely there'll be a wealth of authorities and precedents used, definitely.
So if we take a quick look then at the questions that are coming in. So we have K John on Twitter who wants to know, what would Najib lose if he is convicted? Can he still be a politician with a criminal record? Would he lose his Datuk Sri title?
Definitely he cannot stand. That's for sure. Now, whether his datukship goes, that's really up to the sultans. I know I've heard previous sultans mention how, they will withdraw their datukships from people who are convicted. I think that's a correct policy. I hope that is upheld.
We have Darren on Twitter as well saying, I'm asking, if the lead counsel of the defense team is absent, can the hearing still proceed?
Well, I think it'd be really embarrassing if the lead counsel couldn't make it. And let me just say, I mean, I know of him. I've seen him before, Hisham Tepotek. He's an excellent lawyer. So I don't think that will happen with him. But if it does, really, you know, there's a huge team of lawyers there. And really, they should have somebody ready to be able to take it up, because you know, lawyers cannot simply take up a case they cannot appear for. That's a rule of etiquette. So if they're not going to be able to make it, they better make arrangements for somebody else to take on the case. I think it's very unseemly for lead counsel to say, for a case of this magnitude, they're not turn up. I think that's very disrespectful to the court. And I doubt Hisham would do something like that.
Again, if you have questions, you can call, WhatsApp, tweet. Looking at the messages, right, some of them are echoing larger concerns that we've heard elsewhere that have been raised by the public about independence and transparency, especially considering the prominent position that Najib occupied and continues to hold. How would you respond to that?
I'd like to think we're in a different place with the judiciary right now. If you ask me, they seem to be the only organ of government who's really going about their work and not looking to shirk from it. I think this Chief Justice is, so far in my assessment, a very good one, who seems to be trying to restore the judiciary's credibility. So for myself, you know, I would say that there's a lot more good to the judiciary now than there was in the past. And I think this case would be interesting in terms of sealing the judiciary's reputation one way or the other.
And why is it so crucial for our judiciary to be perceived as independent and upright?
Oh, it's of the greatest of importance, simply because the judiciary is the one that will decide any dispute in this country with finality, you know. And as the adjudicating authority for most disputes, people have to have confidence in them. And if you don't have confidence in the judiciary, then people are not going to rely on it. And I think that's a very dangerous thing. The judiciary is very, very important to our country. And it's also important to give it that trust, you know, because that's all we have. And to me, the judiciary is the last bastion to do justice. You know, we don't expect it from the executive. We don't expect it from legislature. But it's the judiciary that will protect us, because they are the guardians of the Constitution. They are there to make sure that the laws run true and pure as they should. And if you can't have an independent judiciary or one that can be trusted, it will just add to greater chaos that's into the country.
Fari, 30 seconds left with you. What take-home message would you like to leave us with?
That we all have to be a part of a better kind of country. We all have a role to play. We cannot tolerate corruption, because you know, this is the biggest thing that our country is really grappling with right now, and it's falls on all of us to do our part. You can't expect the politicians and all that to do it for us. Each and every one of us has to stand up and make ourselves counted. Thank you.
Fari, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was lawyer Fari Azad, answering some questions in general, but also kind of honing in on previous politically linked cases and some lessons, I suppose, that we could take away from that. We've been talking about this in light of the upcoming final appeal of Datuk Sri Najib Razak in SRC International, that particular case. Keep those thoughts coming and keep it here. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.